Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome indeed to hour number two of the Mark Mosey Show. And I know the Florida Gators spring game was this past Saturday. To put a wrap on spring practice, this guy does a great job covering the Florida Gators for the Orlando Sentinel up there in Gainesville. He's my good friend Edgar Thompson. I know he has thoughts on the football team heading into the fall. Edgar, how you doing today, buddy?
Hey, Mark. Doing fine. Glad you're back on your feet and feeling better, man.
I appreciate the kind words, and it's always good hearing from you. So let's start with this. How was that spring game on Saturday? Fans, the performance, I'll let you take the floor, man. How'd it go?
I thought it was a beautiful day, first off. I've been to some of these spring games. It's been pretty toasty.
Yeah.
And this was a nice day. It was that mid-70s, just a glorious Gainesville spring day. And that was going to encourage people who love Florida football, which is a lot of people in Gainesville, to go out there. And I thought it was a good turnout. They reported 48. I mean, and maybe at its peak, it seemed a little generous, but there was definitely a good crowd. You know, those things, they always put a little thumb on the scale for, I feel, but whatever. Yeah. It was in the 40s, and it was, you know, they were treated to some good moments, but I do, you know, we'll stick to the positive initially. I mean, DJ Lagway, who has struggled this spring, behind closed doors primarily. We don't get to see a lot. We had one chance to get a good glimpse at the Gators one day, a handful of us, and he had a rough day, man. A lot of turnovers. And that kind of played out pretty consistently. One of the reporters, Jacob Rudner of 24/7 Sports, who does a wonderful job. He's really plugged in and does get some good intel. Reported he had three interceptions in the second scrimmage. So he's coming out and I'm like, man, are we getting Felipe Franks 2.0 here? Because in 2016, Felipe Franks threw four passes, threw an interception, and it was like rough. Yeah. And it was kind of a harbinger because Felipe was always a shaky decision maker who had some good moments. Certainly Dan Mullen got him playing much better, but was kind of what he was. Well, DJ comes in, the lights weren't too bright, so to speak. It was an afternoon game, and he was kind of showed that he's a bit of a gamer. He had a really nice hookup with Aiden Mizell, Orlando kid, who I think has some real upside at receiver. And nice hookup for an easy touchdown. And then he threw a pass from basically the right hash all the way across the field over the defender before the safety got there to find Tyler Spirito, who's a former walk-on, so not like your top target, you wouldn't think, for a 32-yard play that was better than any throw I saw Graham Mertz make last year. And it's no criticism of Graham Mertz, more praise of DJ Lagway's arm talent. Now, he did make a horrible read where he telegraphed a pass in the flat that Manny Nunnery picked up. So some good and bad. He fell a couple throws early in the game particularly. But he looks like he has definitely got tools to build on, which you would expect from the number one rated quarterback in the country. But he did, again, have a rough spring. But I also remember back in 2006, a young man who had a very rough spring and didn't have a great throwing motion and made a lot of mistakes. And his name was Tim Tebow. So, and look, the rest is history there. And I think DJ, they'll find a role for him. He should have a role, needs a role. It isn't going to be a starting quarterback of the Florida Gators at any point in 2024, barring an injury to Graham Mertz. This is Graham Mertz's team. But Tebow, when you look at his numbers, I think he threw for 383 that year and 200 were against Western Carolina. He had one significant pass, two if you include the jump pass against LSU. But he had a 35-yard touchdown against LSU where it was this rocker step where he faked he was going to run, stepped back and found Lewis Murphy for 35 yards. I still can see that play in my head. I came out of my seat. It was as good a play call as Dan Mullen made at Florida, and he made many of them, and it was executed to perfection. That was the only pass he threw that year of significance, and he had like a handful of big runs. So So DJ Lagway will have at least as much impact as Tim Tebow, but for a much lesser team. And the big reason this team, well, not big reason, but one of the many reasons it won't be that team, those six eventual national champions, is because the defense that year in 06 was nails and has an incredible defense, held Troy Smith like 85 passing yards after he won the Heisman, but to win the title. But this defense, the good news is it looks like it's going to be better than last year, which was a historically bad defense in many respects. It was a terrible, team. Just no pressure on the quarterback, gave up too many explosive plays, no playmakers. The thing about this defense is it looks like it's active. It's got some depth. It has some experience. It got through the transfer portal. It looks like it's going to be a far cry from last year's, because Shamar James and Justice Boone are going to be two key players on this defense. Shamar, the linebacker, Justice Boone in this last year with a torn ACL, which was a big loss, as a strong side end. He's good. He's going to be good. And this year, those guys, plus what I saw the other day, are going to give you a pretty solid unit. The thing is, now to the negative, I don't see anyone on that defense, for example, that scares me, right? Like, oh, God, man, this guy's just going to, be just making plays all over the field, Brandon Spikes or Reggie Nelson or, guys like that. I mean, Sharif, it doesn't have a Sharif Floyd, Dominic Easley, John Bullard up front either. Those guys, Jared Davis. I mean, these playmakers that have made some of these defenses over the past 15 years or so memorable. I don't see one of those guys yet. Not saying one isn't there, one isn't going to develop. And then on offense, beyond Eugene Wilson, I don't see a guy who's really going to scare you. Now, he's scary. This guy's a Percy Harvin, Dalvin Cook-ish type guy. Not saying he's going to have those guys' careers or ultimate impact, but man, you get him in space and just he can make it happen. He's extremely talented, but I don't know who's complimenting him as a receiver or even from the running back room, because Trevor Etienne would have given you a second one of those home runny type guys, and I don't know who it is. I don't see one, but that's one, small sample size that we just saw too. The guy who I thought impressed the most, the biggest surprises is Jordan Baugh. Young man was a three-star running back who played like every position in high school, like safety and linebacker and running back and, wing T quarterback a Wildcat quarterback. And Alabama came in late on him and Florida got him. And I'm like, what's all the fuss, three-star? Well, I saw the fuss the other day. This kid's 6 feet, 237. He's got acceleration. He's got really good feet. And he looks like he's going to be a kid who's going to factor. And I was excited about him. So maybe he becomes something a little unexpected to give this offense a little more life. Graham Mertz will be, running the show. He looked fine the other day. He made some nice throws. Nothing spectacular. He laid some in there nicely. He's going to be solid, if not good. But he's not just going to elevate an offense and put it on his shoulders and – take you, to the promised land, like Joe Burrow, who did actually have two, all pro receivers and Chase and Jefferson. Let's not forget. But, he's not that. But Graham's going to be very good, but he needs a little bit more around him. For sure, offensive line, it's too early to tell, and that unit's certainly going to need to be better, too.
I just let you do it, man. I know you've held it in for what, 2 days now? I appreciate that.
I just tried to sum it all up. I heavily hit most of the high points.
You did. I got to make sure Lagway gets on the field. I'm not expecting him to start, but especially with transfer portal and these players just jumping ship after a year, isn't that a concern also if you're the coaching staff? Make sure Lagway's happy with this program.
If he's not happy based on what I hear with his NIL, then I don't know what is happiness.
That's a good point.
He's, He's apparently driving around town in a Bentley SUV. So
what?
He just launched a clothing line on Saturday. I mean, guy hadn't played it down. He's 18. So he's doing pretty well. He should be happy. University of Florida is a great place to go to school. I got my back door open right now. The birds are chirping. The weather's fantastic. Gainesville's a nice place to live. It's a great university. I mean, let's not forget that going to school is an important part of being a student athlete, or should be. You know, this isn't all about just training and playing ball and, you know, setting yourself up for a you know, long life of success beyond football, too, because that'll end. You know, not to be cliche, but it does. And he's got it good. Hopefully, I think he really likes Billy Napier. But, yes, you want to involve him to win football games as much as, like, you know, mitigate the risk of a potential transfer, which I don't see that happening. I mean, it could happen if Billy Napier doesn't survive this season. And he and L.J. McCray, who also had his moments the other day, the Daytona Beach Mainland kid, who was the number one defensive line recruit. So you got the number one D-line recruit, the number one quarterback recruit in the country here. And you could lose both of them if you fired Billy Napier after this season. So I'm hoping that this was a better showing at this spring game. Last year's was an eyesore. I mean, it was a 10-7 game. It was horrible. And this year is 19-17. It wasn't like riveting too often. It wasn't like great, but spring games aren't typically like riveting. But it was a little too conservative for my liking at times, but you know, Billy's going to play it like he plays it. There was a 3rd and 5 earlier in the game. He's running 2 plays, 3rd, 3-yard, 2-yard, Mentrell Johnson grinding out a 1st down, stuff like that. That's just kind of how Billy plays. He's just going to be who he is. And, you know, it can work if you have the right talent. And the talent is a lot better. The new remade coaching staff. It seems like the defensive side of the football has a lot more energy, coaching, and a lot more synergy. Because I think last year there was a good bit of headbutting with the 30-year-old coordinator and 2 of your assistants being in their 50s and not really buying, you know, staying, you know, buying the program, so to speak. So I think Billy's got things moving in the right direction, I guess, in summation.
What about Edgar Thompson at the Orlando Sentinel, where Billy Napier is going to still call the plays on offense?
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of that. I think you make all these changes. You get rid of 2 veteran defensive coaches, Corey Raymond, who arrived with a lot of buzz, Sean Spencer, who has a nice track record with James Franklin at Vanderbilt and Penn State, and then was in the NFL for a couple of years with the Giants. Yet, you 2 veteran guys, you got rid of them, fired them. And you hired 2 30-something guys, Will Harris, who had some real success at Washington, a Pete Carroll acolyte, played for Pete Carroll at USC. So he's impressive. Gerald Chapman, who came from Tulane, he's been very nomadic, but he was in the NFL for a couple of years. He's been here, he's been there, he's been everywhere, 35-year-old guy. He is like, you can hear him down in Micanopy over here during practice. That guy is a booming voice. He holds kids accountable every snap. I like what they're doing. They got Ron Roberts in here, got a veteran now in that room that's going to command, you know, respect and kind of direct things a little and give Austin Armstrong a sounding board, the young defensive coordinator, who I think maybe, you know, was a bit overwhelmed as the season went on last year. They gave 38 points plus a game the last 5 games during the 5-game losing streak. So I think he's made those changes. He's blown up the strength and conditioning staff. He has redone the nutrition program. He brought in a guy from A&M, chief of staff, Mark Robinson. You had a chief of staff. You had a GM now. And this is being run almost like an NFL organization over here, or they're attempting to like structure it that way. And you're doing all of this, but you're going to still call plays. It's like, I mean, I get it. I get it. Look, if I'm, hey, I'm told tomorrow, Edgar, you got 1 month to prove yourself. Am I going to get somebody to write my stories for me? I mean, no, I'm going to write them. And you know, I want to have my hands on the wheel. So I get why he would want that. But I think to free him up operationally would be to his benefit and the Gators. He says that Russ Callaway, who's being promoted to a co-OC role, is going to be much more involved in the scheming and game planning, which is going to free him up. But he's still going to have that play sheet, man, in his hands and looking at it a lot and calculating and playing during games. And he wants that role, and I think he believes that he's best suited to do it. Okay? I mean, we'll see. I don't think the offense was a huge issue the last five games of last year, but the first seven, it was kind of, it got better as the season went on for sure. But there was a stretch where the offense was pretty solid, but I just didn't find it to be very explosive, and
no,
it's just too conservative, man. I mean, I want to see, and then when they do break out of the mold and try something, the timing just always seemed like, huh, so you're going to run a double reverse flea flicker now? Okay. I mean, the Georgia game is the one that stands out. I mean, you're on the 50-yard line of a 7-7 game on first down against the fastest defense you're going to face. That team can cover sideline to sideline. Great defense. Best you're going to face. And you run a double reverse. It's a slow developing play. And you lose all that yardage, and it killed that drive. And then later in the game, the famous one where it was 4th and 2 from their 37, the Gators, and he calls that snap it between the legs play, and, you know, guys is dead to rights in the backfield, ATN. And it was like, I just didn't, those were ill-timed, ill-conceived calls, I thought. And there were just a few too many of those the last two seasons for my liking. And that's why I would prefer he gave up play calling duties, and he could be in, of course he's going to be involved, have veto power, you know, have suggestions and authority, but let someone else do all the heavy lifting.
We're the Edgar Thompson, Orlando Sentinel. Is it must win against Miami in the opener?
If you want momentum. You get Samford, I think, a week later. So you're going to, at least that's going to be your one gimme on the schedule. I mean, the schedule is, much has been made of the schedule. The schedule is brutal. And it's going to be tough sledding, particularly by the time you get to November. I mean, that November schedule is just,
it's brutal.
Absolutely just insane. And, you know, the thing is, they're doing the same schedule in 2025 because the SEC wants to stick to the 8-game model and probably doesn't want to invest all the time putting it all together again, because I think they are waiting to get a 9th game at a 9th conference game, the SEC. But ESPN's going to have to pay for it. They're not just going to say, yeah, we'll just play a 9th game. No, it's like $5 million per school extra. 3 to 5, 7 even. It's going to be in the 3, 4, 5 million ballpark, you would think. Maybe more. Maybe someone listening is laughing. Well, it's going to be 10. Yeah. Whatever it would be. It's going to be a lot of money for that 9th game. But so they're going to have to play the same list of schools again other than the non-con. But next year they got to go to Miami. And they get USF instead of UCF. But I'll tell you, USF is trending. They're pretty good under this new coach.
Yeah.
So they get Miami, then you get Samford, then you get A&M, which is going to be early, new coach, all that. Maybe you can pick that one off. At Mississippi State, I mean, dude, you're looking at potentially 4 wins right there if you beat Miami. Then you get UCF after a bye. You got to be feeling pretty good if you're – even if you're 3-1 at that point, so you lose to Miami, you win 3 – then you get UCF. You could be 4-1 going to Tennessee, but then it gets really tough. You got at Tennessee, Kentucky at home, always a tough out. I still think that's probably a beatable Kentucky team, though I don't know the roster and all the ins and outs of it. It feels like they're kind of in treading water a bit. Then you got Georgia, at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss at home, at Florida State. God help us.
Yeah.
Now, that's a closing schedule. That's the gauntlet personified right there.
It's an NFL schedule. We'll end with this then.
Yeah.
We'll end with this. A Bentley at 18? What were you driving at 18 years old, Edgar?
What'd you have? I had a Dodge Challenger.
Nice.
1971 Dodge Challenger. My stepfather, late stepfather, who was a big car guy, big NASCAR fan, got me into Daytona. He came down here to Daytona a number of times. We went. He, great man. He got me a Dodge Challenger, and it had a Hemi in it.
Wow.
And they were like, nah, we ain't insuring that. So I had a 318 and a Dodge Challenger and got in plenty of trouble driving that car. So it was a cool car. I remember the price was $1,572. Oh, a Bentley, I think you would have to multiply times 100 to get to the price tag of what that one might be.
I am turning 42 next month, and I think I'm cool driving my Mustang, which is about... How old's that vehicle? It's 13 years old, and I think I'm pretty cool with my car.
Yeah, exactly. I drive a Volkswagen Taos, which is an upgrade on what I used to have. I mean, it's a sweet little car,
I like
but it's
it.
Not an SUV, a Bentley SUV.
Did you, bonus, Edgar Thompson, what'd you think of the Masters where Scheffler won yesterday?
Well, you know, it has... an air of inevitability when Scotty's playing right now. And I'm sorry to say, I mean, I covered Bay Hill, he won. I covered TPC, he won. That's the second time I've covered him when Bay Hill and TPC did the same in 2022 and then went on to win the Masters that year. He won match play that year as well. So this guy, when he gets on a heater, man, he is tough. And the tournament had some promise. And he, you know, of course, makes birdie on 8 after a bogey. And you're like, okay. And then the not shot on 9 was absurd. He hit it an inch. And then 10, which he doubled the day earlier, he birdies. And you're like, and then he does bogey 11 and makes an easy par on 12, which is undoing rounds right and left over the years. Then he does, you know, the typical birdie on 13. And you're like, this guy's gone at this point. And then he birdies 14, and you're like, now it's really over. And then he birdies 16, and by then it was over. So he just, I mean, look, I mean, what is that? I'm thinking it through. It's like 8 through 16, he had like 5 birdies and a bogey. I think that's what it was, but whatever it was, I mean, he's just a stone cold killer, man. I mean, the guy, and he's unflappable, and he just hits irons as well as anyone has in years. People like to compare him to Tiger in terms of his iron play, you know. I'm going to hold off on the Tiger comparison, Jeff, but he does seem to have that ability to kind of close the door on people and intimidate them. Because on 11, Oberg, who played wonderfully and looks like a future star, kind of hit his in the water on 11 left. And then Morikawa, who's the only other guy that you talk about in the same vein as Scotty when it comes to irons right now, just yanks it dead into the middle of that lake guarding 11. And then Homa, who I thought was still there, and he was, just, you know, airmails the green on, or he didn't airmail it. He hit it and it took a hard bounce on 12 right into the bushes, and that was the end of him. So that's what happened to Tiger, if you remember in 19. You know, you had Koepka hit it in the water. Finau, I think, hit it in the water on 12. Molinari, you know, blew it. I mean, the guys just start falling apart all around them. I think the 2001 Masters, I believe it was, like Goosen hit it in the creek on 13. Singh hit it on the creek on 13. There might have been another guy. They just start to kind of fall apart around guys that just are – that talented and that unflappable, you just kind of wait for others to make the mistake. Jack Nicklaus, that was always philosophy. It was just like, I'm just going to play, you know, solid golf and hit it to the right parts of the greens and let everyone else just, you know, make mistakes and many would win.
I think it was cool, and I'll let you go. When he hits that final putt, you could see just there's so much pressure. And then he knows he wins. You could tell it's like he just, it leaves him. And he's just like, and then he lets the emotion out. I think it's really cool. And when you see it live, you could just see it. So much emotion.
Well,
yeah,
he had tears kind of. I mean, look, he's about to become a father. I'm not one, never will be. It'd be one of the biggest regrets of my life. And, you know, my dad, in fact, turns 85 today. And I mean, I'm so lucky to have that guy. We're going to be in Ireland 2 weeks from right now for a trip. I think I told you when we were chatting, playing golf. And I'm blessed. And he's going to have a child anytime now, his first. He's a very faith-based guy. I've met his family to a degree. His parents seem very nice. His mother was like a kick-ass CEO of some company in Dallas. His dad was like a stay-at-home mom, kind of. And 80-whatever-year-old grandmother at Bay Hill 2 years ago, 85 or 6, walked like all 72. Like, so they're very tight-knit family, and they're just good people. He's not great as a quote, he's not effusive. He's not very conversational in interviews. You know, media wanted a little more out of the guy, but he just keeps it kind of simple and straightforward. And that's kind of how he plays golf. He's this very even-keeled dude who doesn't like get out with, you know, thinking outside of his comfort zone. And it's working.
It is.
Obviously.
You're absolutely right. Edgar Thompson, Orlando Sentinel. I appreciate coming on. Tell your dad I said happy birthday, and I hope you guys have fun in Ireland.
Don't know how we won't, but I appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for having me.